of Travelling Stories and Tale Tellers, Kalila wa Dimna. Kalila e Dimna. In our age of mass publication, copyright deposit libraries and the internet, it is difficult to imagine just how tenuous was the survival of medieval manuscripts. A story might have been composed orally, then transmitted from teller to teller before ever being written down. The preparation of writing materials, parchment, vellum, even paper, inks and quills, was an expensive and time-consuming enterprise. The task of writing itself was painstakingly slow, arduous, eye-straining labour. Once written down, copies were often made, sometimes with meticulous accuracy, sometimes in haste, under cramped conditions, with little light, or with constant distractions. If interest was lost in a text, the vellum or parchment was cleaned off and reused. The bindings of a well-used manuscript book might give, and it might lose its first and last pages, or one of the booklets which were sewn together to make it up. Sometimes ink corroded the pages. Maggots or hungry rodents feasted on them. Once worn, manuscript pages could be folded and used as padding in book bindings, or even used for kindling. Over the centuries, some libraries were burned, blown up, or plundered in times of war. Even now, manuscripts are still mutilated by readers who take a fancy to part of it or wish to censor it. Every text, and all of its manuscript versions and translations, has a different tale to tell. This is part of the tale of the Book of Kalila and Dimna. Kalila wa Dimna is an Arabic collection of tales which is and was widely read and translated. It perplexes and fascinates modern scholars and general readers alike. Its complex textual history reaches back through time and across continents and language groups to find its origins in oral tales from the Indian subcontinent. Sometime around the 4th to 6th century of the Common Era, or possibly earlier, the tales were collected in a now lost Sanskrit version of the Panchatantra, a five-book treatise on human conduct. A portion of the Panchatantra went on to form part of a now lost Pahlavi compendium, in whose frame a narrator, Borzui or Barzuya, a Persian physician, tells how he excels in medicine and rises through the court ranks. His researches uncover references to an elixir made from mountain herbs that is capable of reanimating the dead. In the hope of finding the herbs and concocting the elixir, he gains permission from his sovereign to travel to India to seek them out. After extensive experimentation fails, a wise man reveals to him that the elixir represents knowledge, a metaphor for the teachings represented in the books that he translates, including Kalila wa Dimna. Kalila takes its title from the names of two protagonists, both jackals and advisers to the Lion King. However, between the tale of Dimna advising the king with animal fables and discussing his Machiavellian strategies with Kalila, another story intervenes to set up the narrative. An old man admonishes his idle sons. Soon after, the eldest son is travelling by ox-driven carriage when one of the oxen becomes stuck in the muddy road and cannot be rescued. The servant whom the son has left to guard it soon gets bored with his pointless mission and abandons the ox, which manages to struggle free. Meanwhile, his lowing has terrified the Lion King, whose calculating adviser Dimna sets off to find the source of the din and returns with the ox. The ox, Shanzaba, soon transplants the jackal and the lion's entourage as a favoured vassal and adviser, and Dimna plots his downfall. The tales are embedded one in another like Chinese boxes or layers of an onion, in a manner familiar to those who've encountered Scheherazade's tale-telling in 1001 Nights. Kalila was translated, it seems, from Pahlavi, Middle Persian, into Arabic sometime in the 8th century by Ibn al-Mughaffa, a Persian secretary in the Abbasid court. However, the two oldest Arabic manuscripts date not from the 8th century, but from 1221 and 1336 respectively. The earliest surviving translations into Syriac, Greek, Persian, and possibly also Hebrew predate these manuscripts. The extensive circulation and translation of Kalila, whose textual history includes gaps, missing versions in manuscripts and linguistic variety makes it impossible to say that today we have an 8th century Kalila translated by Ibn al-Muqaffa. Rather, we have distinct instances of particular moments in Kalila's existence, single renditions frozen in time, like lark's tongues in aspic. The old Castilian Kalila Idimna is just such an instance. It survives in two main manuscripts that transmit the tales in a different number and a slightly different order. One has many simple but elegant illustrations. This is manuscript A, and the other, manuscript B, does not. Illustrated manuscript A is written in a later hand, but studies of its language and of the language of B suggest that it represents an older version of the text. The two manuscripts have many differences. One pair of editors estimated that there are between as many as 15 and 20,000 variants between the two, yet some passages are almost exactly parallel, almost as close as two passages from printed editions. In other places, manuscript B, with its older hand but more modern Castilian, includes material clearly taken from the Arabic Kalila but missing from manuscript A, such as Ibn al-Muqaffa's prologue. How can we account for the transmission of the Castilian Kalila? Does all this mean that there were two Castilian translations, or a translation of one Arabic version retouched lightly when it was compared to a second Arabic version, or even to a translation into another language, such as Hebrew or Latin? There are at least 100 years between the earlier manuscript and the date scholars believe the translation to have been carried out. However, that date is based on the concluding words, or colophon, of the older of the two manuscripts. And I quote, "Here ends the book of Kalila Idimna. It was taken out of Arabic into Latin, being put into Romance by order of Prince Alfonso, son of the most noble King Ferdinand, in 1261. The book is ended. May God always be praised." The colophon raises three issues: translation method, dating, and Alfonso's involvement. First, what does out of Arabic into Latin being put into Romance actually mean? Was there a now lost intermediary Latin translation? Such a view is at odds with the Arabizing syntax and widely accepted view that the Castilian appears to represent a faithful translation of the Arabic. Second, Alfonso acceded to the throne of Castile and Leon in 1252, 9 years before the date in the colophon which has him as prince. How to explain the difference? Well, scholars devise ingenious explanations in the case of necessity. A later scribe could easily have miscopied the date from Roman numerals when his source actually had 1251. A scribe closer to the dates of Alfonso's reign might have noticed the discrepancy, but only if he was concentrating on the job and not, for example, thinking with relief about what he was to do next. Students of medieval script have noticed that, as scribes get towards the end of the piece they are copying, the gap between lines increases and the handwriting often becomes larger and untidier. As you might imagine, problems with dates in Roman numerals at the end of long texts are not uncommon. On the other hand, what are we to make of the statement of Alfonso's princely patronage? If Kalila was translated in 1251, it was the first piece of literary prose in Castilian. In fact, as far as I'm aware, in any Romance language that was translated from Arabic. And Kalila was the only literary piece produced at the command of Alfonso, who sponsored extensive scientific and pseudoscientific translations throughout his reign. Was Alfonso really the benefactor of Kalila's translation? Was a translator trying to curry favour with Alfonso or attract his patronage? Further, why would a crown prince commission a translation of a text that portrays cowardly rulers being advised by, in the words of our seminar students, honest stories told dishonestly by corrupt and self-serving advisers? If Alfonso did commission it, why would he do so? Did he know about its contents? Finally, my favourite solution. Is this claim to patronage simply a device to gain prestige and approval for an independent translation by association with a monarch renowned for the intellectual achievements of the translators and scientists at his court?